This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The offshore drilling ban.
Will it stand?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bill Radke. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. A court may say no to President Obama's oil drilling moratorium.
And Britain says no to the Queen's pay hike. And Hollywood says no to age discrimination. Well, online, anyway. But first,
bankers are facing new rules. Is your money safer? Financial analyst Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company joins us every Tuesday from St. Louis. Hi, Julie.
Morning.
So we're learning more about how Congress's new financial rules will hit bankers. Last night, lawmakers said they're cutting the fee that credit card companies get to charge retailers for debit card transactions. A lot more rules being bandied about. You're following this stuff, Julie. Do the rules rein in banks? Will they prevent another crash and burn and bailout?
Well, part of it is going to help. The banksters basically are saying, oh, you're going to destroy our business, our profitability. We're not going to be competitive globally. That's a lot of theater. Basically, what they are going to be clamped down on and is selling these complex derivatives and trading with their own money. That's what got them into trouble on that side. They're crying that it's going to reduce their profits maybe 10 to 20%. But the key reform that we want is that you don't play with government-insured depositors' money. You can gamble, I mean, invest all you want, but with investors' money, and those are the people who know the risks. So they're looking at, you know, how are we going to make this up? How are we going to make the revenues up? And now it's going to be raising the fees again.
So overall, Julie, we just have a few seconds left. Your take on how safe we should feel?
It's a step in the positive direction here. You know, the banks are still going to make a ton of money, but they're going to have to go back to their traditional business of making bad loans or making loans to people rather than being the trading operations. The likely outcome, though, in a couple of years, you're going to see Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, everybody who became a bank so that they could do this very high-level trading, probably spin off their banks into a new public offering. So they'll make a ton of money that way, and we'll just have the cycle kind of repeat itself. It's a necessary reform.
Yes. Julie Neiman, Smith Moore & Company. Thanks a lot.
You bet.
Speaking of financial reform, starting next week, people who open a bank account will have to opt in for overdraft protection. It used to come courtesy of the banks at your expense. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith reports new regulation is putting an end to that.
This could be the beginning of the end of the $40 coffee. That's when you use your debit card for your morning mocha and you don't have enough money in your account to cover the charge. The bank lets the charge go through and slaps your $5 coffee with a $35 overdraft fee. Leslie Parrish is with the Center for Responsible Lending.
People were spending billions of dollars a year on overdraft fees when they didn't even want that type of overdraft protection.
Now that consumers will have to ask for the coverage, some banks, like Bank of America, are ending overdraft protection altogether. Others, like Chase, are launching aggressive campaigns to get consumers to opt in. Economist Mike Mebs advises banks. He says banks can still convince consumers to opt into overdraft protection by selling it as a benefit.
The banks are being thrown into a situation where they're saying now, I have got to educate the consumer that I'm the best place to have this benefit.
Mebs says a quarter of consumers generate nearly all the money from overdraft fees, so banks can target them with special opt-in offers and other sales pitches. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, June 22nd. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Oil industry executives in London today sharply criticized President Obama's six-month moratorium on deepwater oil exploration in the Gulf of Mexico. In fact, several oil companies have asked a Louisiana court to overturn the ban, which was put in place after the Deepwater Horizon disaster. Joining us with more is Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
So, a London oil conference is where these companies publicly ripped the president's drilling ban. What are the companies saying in court?
Well, they call the ban arbitrary and capricious. They want a temporary injunction. Basically, that would be let exploratory drilling resume while the court hears their challenge, at least. The judge could rule later today. The oil industry in Louisiana says the moratorium's costing workers $330 million a month in lost wages. It's driving local supply companies and tugboat operators out of business. Already 8 deepwater rigs have pulled out, 25 are left. Of course, they're looking for someplace else to drill.
Someplace else besides the Gulf of Mexico? Where would they go?
Well, you know, it's not something you just do overnight, you know, pull up one of these massive deep water drilling rigs. But Manachar Takin at the Center for Global Energy Studies in London told me there is plenty of demand all over the world.
Brazilians especially, they have a very large, huge program of drilling that they are looking for deep water rigs, and they're also looking for floating production and storage and offloading vessels, and there's a shortage of them as well.
So, you know, Brazil has just discovered huge reserves. They're like 3,000 feet down under these salt deposits. There's oil and gas in deep water off West Africa, Indonesia, probably also the North Atlantic. In fact, today Libya said that even in spite of the Gulf spill, it is perfectly happy to have some drilling rigs show up and explore its waters.
Very interesting. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thank you.
You're welcome.
One of the less serious casualties of this oil spill may be the affordable oyster po' boy. This is the famous New Orleans sandwich, fried oysters on Louisiana French bread with lettuce and tomatoes and mayo and hot sauce, of course. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Adrian Hill tells us the spill has depleted the oyster supply and the po' boy is becoming a luxury item.
Lovey Baratini is standing in a long line at Zimmer's, a neighborhood seafood place in New Orleans. She loves oysters, loves po' boys, and has been paying up since the oil spill.
I went as high as $15 the other day.
Would you go higher?
No, that's it. That's it. That's enough.
She expects the sandwich will soon be out of her price range.
It's bad, you know. I mean, what are we going to do, you know?
Eat them while you can, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm doing. I had oysters the other day.
There are lots of stories about the history of the po' boy sandwich. But according to the city's Po' Boy Preservation Festival, the food got its start during a transit worker strike in 1929. A local restaurant offered to feed striking workers, and the poor boy, or po' boy sandwich, was born. But now the oyster version is moving on up.
No longer a po' boy. That's true. It's a rich boy now.
That's Charlene Zimmer. She owns Zimmer Seafood. The price of the fresh oysters she uses for her sandwiches jumped from $37 to $54 a gallon. She's hiked her po' boy price from $8.95 to $10.95 and says another increase is on the way.
People are not happy at all about that.
Do you think they'll still eat them?
Yeah, I think so. But I notice people are buying less oyster po' boys and more shrimp and roast beef and ham and cheese, you know, that kind of stuff now.
At Charlie's Seafood, another neighborhood restaurant, owner Frank Brightson pulled the oyster po' boy off his menu. For a while, he'd sell one if a customer asked for about $18, but not anymore.
I just couldn't justify the higher prices on our menu in a restaurant that is supposed to be inexpensive and casual.
Not all oyster po' boys in New Orleans have gotten too big for their name. Some of them are made from oysters harvested and frozen before the oil spill. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Got a house for sale? Be prepared to do some waiting. Existing home sales took a dip in May by 2.2%. The National Association of Realtors report out today was a surprise to analysts who thought deals would get a boost from the home buyer tax credit. For more, we turn to Hugh Johnson of Johnson Illington Advisors in New York. Good morning.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
All right. Doing well. I thought we had this tax credit that was rocketing sales and single-handedly saving the housing market. What happened?
Well, we thought, I think it looked certainly like it was helping. We had a lot of contracts for house sales that were written or signed in the month of April, and we expected those contracts to close in the month of May, so we expected a big surge in those housing sales. And we didn't get that surge, which is pretty clear evidence that we're having trouble closing those contracts. It may be for a variety of reasons, obviously, not the least of which would be, you know, a lot of banks are having trouble processing those mortgage applications. But at any rate, we expected a lot of closings. We didn't get those closings, and it was a big disappointment to myself and just about every analyst on Wall Street.
Do we see an uptick then, Hugh, at the end of this month? Maybe June numbers are better as people try and get the closings done?
Yeah, I think so. At least you cross your fingers and you hope so, because we'll get those mortgage applications and contracts processed in the banking industry, and we'll see the closings in the month of June. So you should see a big surge in existing home sales in the month of June, and that will make up for the big disappointment in May. At least we hope so.
And what happens after this month then? I mean, you know, the closings are done, the tax credit's, you know, fully done. I mean, what happens afterwards? Are we back in a slump?
Yeah, I wouldn't say a slump, but you'll see, obviously, we'll see existing home sales go down because we don't have the help from the tax credit. So they'll go down, but if you sort of step back from the declines that we're likely to see for the month of July and August and ask yourself what's going on in housing, I think you get the picture that since early 2009, housing is recovering, but it's recovering at a frankly anemic, snail-like, very slow pace. It is recovering, but a very slow pace.
Reminds us of something else, maybe the job market, huh?
It sure does. It looks very much like employment. Everything is recovering, but at a slow, very, very slow, and not very good or satisfying pace.
Hugh Johnson from Johnson Illington Advisors in Albany. Thanks.
You're welcome.
The Obama administration unveiled a plan today to end homelessness. The White House has borrowed ideas from successful local programs and stitched them together into a national approach, as Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
Every night, more than 600,000 Americans sleep on the streets. It's a costly problem with ripple effects on the budgets of police departments, social service agencies, and hospitals. Bon Koo is an emergency room doctor at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia. He says the hospital spends millions every year on homeless patients who wind up in the emergency room.
We saw 67 homeless persons accrue $4.8 million in one calendar year.
Some cities have taken an innovative approach called rapid rehousing. It's an effort to keep families from becoming homeless. Some just need the first month's rent and security deposits so they can move into a new apartment. Barbara Poppy worked as a homeless advocate for more than two decades in Columbus. Now she heads up the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, which came up with the national plan. Poppy says Columbus tried the rapid rehousing approach after realizing how much it was spending on shelters.
We had families staying in our emergency shelter system at a cost that exceeded a luxury hotel on a daily basis.
Poppy says the national plan also calls for more public housing and establishes a website covering all federal services for the homeless. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, June 22nd. I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at marketplace.org. We're going to get a take on the global perspective now, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects the United States. The British government is unveiling an emergency budget. It's been forecast to be the harshest budget for the UK in more than 30 years and could be a sign of things to come in the United States and elsewhere. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London this morning with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So what cuts have they spelled out?
Well, the most controversial element is actually a sales tax increase to 20%, up 2.5%. That's not going to be popular. But in addition, there's a freeze on certain welfare benefits and a two-year freeze on public sector pay. That, incidentally, will hit the Queen. She'll have to scrape by with her annual allowance unchanged at $11 million.
Wait. No raise for the Queen? Are things really that bad in Britain, Stephen?
Well, not as bad as Greece, but we still have one of the highest deficits in Europe here, around 10 or 11%. And the Greek crisis has persuaded governments across Europe to tackle their deficits now before they find it more difficult and perhaps impossible to borrow.
And how does this British plan, Stephen, walk this tightrope between making the needed cuts and not cutting too much?
Well, this is a major concern, and not just here in the UK, also in the US. Here's Philip White, who analyses the European economy for the Centre for European Reform.
The United States is very worried about the general direction of European policy and is worried that this sudden pan-European withdrawal of fiscal stimulus could have relatively very, very negative consequences for the world economy as a whole.
And analysts say the US won't just be fretting about the global repercussions. The US itself will have to cut its deficit at some stage, so it'll be watching what happens next in the UK, especially with particular interest.
All right, Marketplace's Stephen Beard joining us from London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
China's currency swung down today. It's seesawed since the weekend when Beijing unpegged the yuan from the dollar. Long term, though, most expected to rise, nudging up the price of Chinese exports. But there's another reason Chinese goods may cost more: higher labor costs. Young workers are harder to find, in part because of China's one-child policy. Marketplace China correspondent Scott Tong is with us from Shanghai to explain. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, Steve.
So the one-child policy is going on 30 years. That generation is entering the workforce, right?
Yes, and this generation is, as many people call it, the little emperors of China. In general, they were the center of their universes growing up, and now the whole constellation has changed. They're now workers for somebody else. Several HR managers we spoke to described this generation in general as moodier, more demanding. A friend of mine even said that they take personal calls when they're interviewing. It is a debate, but what surveys do show is human resources is the number one source of angst for businesses in China.
And answering a personal call during an interview, it doesn't sound like they're going to get hired, right?
Well, if you're the company, you need to hire some people from this generation. I mean, this is a whole generation of people. And for all the complaints, this generation has a lot going for it. It's very savvy with technology. They're much more educated than ever before, and they're known to learn quickly. So given the right incentives, they will produce. Now, if you're the company and you get it wrong, they will bolt. The turnover rate in Shanghai is something like 20%, you know, compared to like 5% in advanced economies.
So Scott, so many opportunities there in China. I mean, how do companies hang on to those workers?
It's really hard for them. China's growing so quickly that there aren't enough good people for all of the international companies that want to hire them. So you have these only children who have sky-high expectations. One manager says his workers expect to be promoted every 2 years and a 10% raise every year, which Hewitt and Associates says is the going rate in Shanghai. Mm-hmm. Well, think about then that China manager for a multinational company. He or she has to call headquarters back in, say, Detroit and ask for double-digit personnel raises to keep people. And Detroit says, no, this is a recession. You know, call back when you're sober. So have a little pity for HR managers in China. This is a challenging generation of new workers to deal with.
Marketplace's Scott Tong reporting from Shanghai. Scott, thanks.
You're welcome.
And finally, when you want to know about movies, IMDb is a go-to website. The Internet Movie Database is full of information about the people who worked on your favorite films.
Well, according to the entertainment industry news site The Wrap, unions representing writers and actors are pressuring IMDb to remove one piece of information: ages.
The unions say having their personal data public is costing older workers jobs because of Hollywood's bias against the elderly, meaning people over 40. In Los Angeles, I'm the elderly Bill Radke.
And I'm catching up to you, Steve Chiotakis, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.